It's Christmas time in the city, Johnny.
Talk about the most wonderful time of the year.
What is your favorite Christmas song?
I don't love them.
Really?
I was thinking the other day, though, about, like, there's such interesting theology in some of the classics that is really deep, and I think about it more than I'm older. The line from, this is, we're getting serious right away, but.
Oh, wow.
The line from O Holy Night.
Oh, yeah.
Where it says, long lay the world. Wait, no. In sin and error pining until he appeared and a soul felt its worth. That's amazing. Like, yeah. That's like the entire gospel in two lines, right?
Yeah.
We're trying to fill ourselves up with sin and error, and then when he came, we really felt our true worth. That's the gospel. So, I don't know. I like that one.
And there's verses in that one we don't often sing, but truly he taught us to love one another. His law is love and his gospel is peace. Change shall he bring, for the slave is our brother. And in his name all oppression shall cease.
We should do that here at the church and sing that verse, and they'll be like, I knew they were going lefty loosey up in this church.
I'll always
be
sing
like,
it.
Oh, actually, that's a verse that's been in there forever.
Yeah, I always sing that verse.
Yeah, that's great. I never knew that verse.
Oh, it's the best. Yeah, it's like the gospel leading you to something, which is what it's supposed to do. Yeah, it's very.
Plus, it's got that high note, night divine. You got to really like go for it, right? I mean, you can't just.
Did you get Tori Kelly Christmas album?
I'd have not heard it.
Oh my gosh!
Here's the thing about Christmas albums: like, it's all the same songs. It's just a matter of like who you like, what flavor of that. You know, there's not a lot of like new Christmas music.
No,
we've talked about this before about how like Mariah Carey, she wrote a classic. She found a way to like wedge herself into the classics.
Did you see her Christmas special on was it Netflix or I forget which one?
No,
it was.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, we watched it.
Was she lucid? She's a little off these days.
The
last few years, like the whole, there was that New Year's or the Christmas parade performance where she was kind of like screaming at her background singers because her monitor mix was off or something. There was something wrong there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, before that, go download Tori Kelly.
Okay, Christmas. I'll check it out.
She has two or three originals on there.
Who's really your favorite, though? Do you have like a silly favorite? I like, I like Holly Jolly Christmas, Burl Ives. It's just very, I like his voice.
I can tell you what I don't like.
I don't know if there will be snow, but have a cup of cheer, which is booze, right? We can all admit.
Sure.
He's offering to children, probably, booze. Hey, I don't know if there'll be snow, young man, but have a cup of cheer.
You won't care after a few of these.
Maybe it is snowing.
Yeah, I can tell you what I don't like.
Oh boy.
I don't like, okay, I'm gonna take such heat for this. Mm. I'm not a fan of Little Drummer Boy.
Well, it's weird.
It's a strange song.
Yeah. Bringing drums to the to the Christ child's birth.
Yeah, it's just very.
Hey, you know what? I know he'd love. Let me bang on this drum for you.
Yeah.
Hey, you've had a long journey.
And then the newborn smiled at me.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that was gas. You know,
could be. And the idea that, like, I don't know, I had no gift to bring, but I can play my drums. It's kind of self-serving in a way because you're like, well.
Johnny, I am a poor boy, too. Like, I'm not trying to defend it, but that's what
he said. Is that. I'm a poor boy, too.
He's empathizing with
There is something to that. I like that.
But,
that's true. That's good.
Yeah, that one bugs me a little bit. The whole said the little lamb to the shepherd boy. Like,
right.
I'm like, okay, now we're just talking animals.
You had a
stuff.
Cup of cheer, if you heard that. You've had many cups of cheer.
Remember Tim Hawkins always said, a child shivers in the cold.
We must bring him silver and gold.
look at that baby shivering. Throw some gold on him.
Oh, he's going to be loaded.
Yeah, that one's just like they were just rhyming words on that one. And it's great. And it's got a few great lines, but like the rest of them, they're just rhyming.
Right.
Which, I mean, you know, as a songwriter.
And they didn't bring silver, did they? They brought gold.
Correct. They didn't even bring it. It's gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
Frankincense and gold. That was the original.
Let's bring him silver and gold. I thought of that exact thing, but I was like, that's not even.
Yeah.
They might have
had silver in there. We don't know.
It's not even biblically accurate. Look, if you're talking about biblically accurate songs, and the worship team and I go back and forth about this all the time.
Yeah.
There are a few things. Remember the old song, Days of Elijah?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, people freaked out about that song. That is my least favorite worship song of all time. And I'll tell you why, Johnny. Because theologically, it is all over the place. It's kind of like, again, we just picked out all the characters in the Bible we could.
Yeah.
These are the days of Jehoshaphat. Like, they just, any character they could find.
First of all, these aren't the days of Elijah.
They're not.
Because when he lived was
those
the days
were the
of,
days of
those
Elijah.
Were the days
or the
of
days
Elijah.
Of John the Baptist
the
might
of,
be theologically
like sands to the hourglass. These are the days of Elijah. Do you remember? Have we ever told the story about when we made our second CD that the producer was trying to get us, we were trying to change our name because we realized our name was pretty much taken.
Right, not the band name, our personal names.
Yeah, no. He was like, I'm a notary. I'll help. No, he was trying to pitch Christian rock band name. So this is Christian rock. So yeah. It's, you know, everything's got to have like a hook to it or kind of a 7-day Jesus. Everything was like very.
It was right before the numbers really took off.
Yeah. The name too. So he goes, what about this? Ark Eden. And we go,
okay.
You go, so tell me, give me the meaning. He goes, you know, like in the Bible, there's the ark and then there's Eden. You put them together.
God's honest truth, his explanation
Ark was, Eden. I was like, this guy.
This is the.
We did not choose that name.
Like, I can't. I mean,
we were Ark Eden 2020. No, we threw a number on
I'm
it.
I'm not
too.
Even sure you could call it theologically shallow. Like, there was no water. Like, there was not even shit. It didn't splash on your shoe.
It wasn't
shoe.
A lot of thought. It was just like, smash just two Bible words together.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what else we could do. Two Bible words to just make a name.
Shepherd spirit.
Shepherd.
You know, you just like, oh, that's interesting. What is that? Was there like a sentimental value to that?
You know, in the Bible.
You know, there's like the shepherds and then there's the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
So we went with that.
Remember, I always wanted to call us floating axe heads.
Oh, from the that's the story from Judges, right?
It's yeah. No, that's an Elijah story.
Oh, the days of Elisha.
Yeah, it's where they're building the. Yeah. It's not a temple per se, but it's some and the axe head falls off, and he goes, "Alas, my father, it was borrowed." Which father is Lord? You know, and he tells him to cut a stick off and throw it in the water.
It sounds like British people would be playing the Bible characters who are clearly Middle Eastern, but they'd be like, "Alas, my child."
I just remember it from the New
King. That accent floated.
I like this accent. I read it New King James growing up. So okay. That's, yeah. So anyway.
But yeah, so the axe head floats and that's how it's like a miracle.
It's like our Christian metal band, Floating Axe Heads.
It does. It sounds a lot heavier than we actually were, though.
That's
like
why we
jangling acoustics.
Oh, God, you are my God. Floating Axe Heads. Yeah, that's very. Speaking of, I found. Well, I've had a lot of videos digitized, old videos.
Right. And people are doing that now. Put them on YouTube.
I found lots of old Scarlet Thread footage I'll have to pass your way when it gets on YouTube.
I don't even know if I want to see it.
I found all campus worship at the UT Presidential Courtyard. Which
I remember that. That was a big deal for us.
Yeah. We were on the truck. The truck that the church
We're in the big square in the big...
No, we weren't in the truck. Sorry. We were on a stage. It was a stage.
And as people randomly walked by. Well, there was a lot of people that stayed. But
so we had done two other events we called Rock Dog. Remember this?
Yeah, I did, of course. Remember Rock Dog.
We gave out free hot dogs at the campus ministry.
And we gave away free rock.
And so they'd play and we'd give them hot dogs and that was it. Rock Dog. So
no hot dogs were launched at us during our performance.
Or hurt in the making.
That's a miracle. The floating hot dog. It would have been that miracle.
It was a huge courtyard. That was very much like a passerby audience in a bad way. It was like people
a transient audience.
They would
if you
eat
will.
A free hot dog, stare at you for a second, and disdain and walk off.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, okay. We had a lot of shows like that because we'd go on some like they bring us along as like a missions team almost. Uh-huh. So it's like we're going to set up in this neighborhood where no one knows we're coming and where culturally your music doesn't at all reach them, but you just go ahead and rock. You know, so it's like, and I appreciate it because we were excited to play.
The one I remember the most is Pickwick Dam, Savannah, Tennessee, which I did not know was a place, but Savannah, Tennessee is a tiny town in the corner of the state, basically Mississippi, almost Mississippi.
Yeah,
Pickwick Dam kind of separates Tennessee from Mississippi, I think, right? And then on the other side is Mississippi. It's like a 5-minute drive.
As much as I'm up on my Mississippi geography.
Okay, so, but I'm just saying it's a swampy area.
Okay.
So we're there and we get up that morning. We stayed the night and then I go, we're ready. It's a big outreach. We're going to Pickwick State Park. And I remember him saying, I just found out it's going to be the hottest day of the year.
Oh, yeah.
108 degrees.
Yeah.
Basically. So we set up in this little ministry truck that the side of it folds in. And then we put winches underneath it, or stands underneath it to hold out so it becomes a stage. And we set up in that truck and we melted. I mean, I was probably 280 then. We're melting in the sun. And I remember, too, that mayflies were in season.
Yes.
They look like mosquitoes, but they're not. They don't bite, but they just hang on you.
Yeah.
So they swarm you. and they just hang on. I had mayflies on my guitar. They're attracted to the vibrations, I think.
Yeah.
And they're just hanging off me and my sweaty frame and just like... And like 12 people are walking by, and then I think they were handing out, literally handing out tracks. It was that kind of a thing. This is how long ago it was. People were still doing that. Like, here, you throw this away. And I just remember thinking, like, this is, and I guess we probably thought, well, this is ministry. We thought we were doing good. And
we were fine.
Yeah. Our hearts were in it, but it wasn't like we were just like, we'll be famous and rich from this. We had good hearts, but it just, you like you said, you put your mind to something, and then you're like, how can we really reach people? And then you swing and miss sometimes when you're doing that.
Well, we were young, and you know, it was a chance to do. I think when you're young, especially, your idea of helping others still revolves around you.
Yeah,
you know, of what you want to do, and I think that, you know, again, whether or not that was the best location, I don't know. There was a lot of times, like All Campus Worship was a great example. We actually coordinated with a lot of the other campus ministries, and that night, like 1,000 people showed up. It was amazing.
Yeah, the news came.
Yeah, I found footage. I have that news story.
Way,
yes,
really?
Somehow it's on this video. I don't know.
Yeah, we couldn't believe that.
Yeah, it was like we had a great sound system. I forget how we had that. Was it ours?
And
I don't think so.
Someone said must have provided it.
And like all the campus, like we had like 1,000 kids out there, and we did worship all night. It was great.
Yeah. Man, that was, yeah.
But most of our shows did not end that way.
That's what I was going to say. Is like, even that, it's preserved in my mind a certain way. So if I watch video of it, I'm like, oh, okay. It's like whenever I have a show, I find that it's never quite the same as I remember it, like a comedy show.
Yeah.
Like, it's why it's important to watch yourself and film yourself, because, like, you have a skewed view of how it went down. You're like, well, everybody laughed. Good deal. And then you watch it and you're like, oh, man, those are really, oh, why am I touching my face every 5 seconds? You need to kind of find the thing that you could fix. And once it's been 20 years, which it has, I can't fix it now. So it would probably just really bother me. I'm like, what are you doing? Hit the notes.
I feel that way every time I hear myself sing, even to this day. But that's just part of
life. You sang this Sunday and you guys sounded good.
You know what, the band.
Church. No, y'all were all good. Everything was good.
Band sounded really good. It was a really good mix. Dane did a great job on the mix. Dude, Logan, our guitar player, is just...
He's great.
He's so good. So good.
He's been with you guys for a while, and he's gotten so... I mean, he was always good, and now it's like he's another level.
Yeah, he's
I don't think I could play for y'all now. You used to say, like, you want to sit in with us? And now I would be so intimidated to do it now.
No,
I'd be so rusty. Yeah.
Come on.
He's noodling around. He's great.
We're doing a Lincoln Brewster version of Joy to the World this next Sunday.
Okay.
And it's very...
A lot of runs and stuff.
A lot of runs and licks. And we have like a whole band lick breakdown in the middle of it. It's like a da-da-da-da-dun, da-da-da-da-dun. It's like this really cool...
Okay.
We played it last year.
Clarinet solo.
Listen, I have a harmonica sometimes. I'll put it in my pocket if I know we're in that key that day. And I keep waiting in the middle of practice to break it out while they're not watching and just right in their ears in the microphone, you know? Because we have a couple songs that could do that. They got a little... What was the one? There's some worship song where I can do a country... Because I can sing country a little bit.
Yeah.
Because country is singing for bad singers. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a...
Oh, man. You just offended half of our listeners.
I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. I have some really great singers in country.
They're supposed to say that we made rock music for people that couldn't sing very well. Then we made rap music for people that couldn't sing at all. So it's like we're going the other way.
Country, like, there's some great singers in country. And then there's some singers that are... I don't get it. And even you go
talk,
back.
Sing.
If you want to go really historical, I could really offend a lot of people.
Oh, man.
I just, like Merle Haggard, I don't think he could sing.
No,
well.
But here's the thing, and I've talked about this on my show now. I like 1970s country because it was written by ugly people. Like, they have stories. You know what I'm saying? Like, people are too pretty now to come up with great music. I think if you've seen something, like Merle Haggard looked like he'd walked 5 miles on his face.
The man's name was Haggard.
That dude saw some stuff.
Yeah.
George Jones said he stopped loving her today. You were like, he did. And he probably stopped showering today. You know, like he saw, what pain has Keith Urban experienced? Okay. Getting burned with his straightening iron? No. Get out of here. He's too pretty.
That's great.
He's not experienced pain.
Yeah.
His pain is, I got to pick which one of these 100 songs I'm going to make famous.
Yeah.
Some writer out there who is ugly, by the way. Guarantee you, the guys who write Keith Urban songs are ugly.
See, they're going to have to come on the show and...
Well, that's what I'm saying. How would we know?
Unless
it's a video. Sir, would you describe... Well, I got four... four toes on my left foot. Like, they would have problems. That's why I wrote Standing Tall.
That's
or whatever.
Why I yeah. wrote I missed that one toe.
Seen, that's right. I've yeah. seen some things.
Yeah. No, Willie Nelson.
Sure.
Again, I'm sorry, guys. I'm not trying. Listen, no, I'm not saying there.
Here's Willie, though. Willie, I get it now more than I ever have.
I do get it now more than I did. I used
like,
to have.
Like, there's a commercial. Did you see the Kohl's commercial?
The Colts?
Kohl's.
I didn't
know. So Kohl's has a commercial with this little girl, and she realizes that across from her is from her window is another lady, this older black lady, and she starts giving her notes. She says hi with her window yeah. on her paper, and then the black lady says hello, and she says, "What's your name?" And they go back and forth. "What's your favorite color?" And she says green, and then the girl goes to look, and the old lady's note's still there. She's not there anymore, and so the little girl's getting concerned. And then the days go by. Then the note starts to fall off. So it's raining. You see the note falling off from inside the window. It's been a few days, and she's like concerned. And then Christmas Day comes, and she's down celebrating with her family, and she's kind of like melancholy. Then she looks over at the window, and she runs over to the window, and now the neighbor lady is back, but she's got a hospital bracelet on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lady says, "Did you get everything you wanted for Christmas?" And then the little girl just nods. And
it got me telling it. Yeah.
And so, but the song playing during that is Willie Nelson's version of the Muppet song, Rainbow Connection.
Yeah.
And there's something about like the soulful, the gritty,
folksy.
Like he saw some things. You know what I'm saying? Like there's heart to it. It's like Springsteen. Springsteen is not traditionally a great singer, but when he sang Streets of Philadelphia and it's about a guy who has AIDS, that one song of the year, it's like, it's this, there's some there. You know what I mean?
No, and let me be clear.
Why do you hate the heartlands, these treasures of America you hate on? No.
I'm literally.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I'm literally talking about like just, we like pure vocalists. You're right. These guys are singer-songwriters.
Right.
And they're. Not bad. I'm not saying they're awful. Right. I don't know. I'm sorry. I went down a hole. I didn't tell you why I don't like Days of Elijah.
I know.
Besides all the stuff. Like, the one line says, these are the days of your servant David rebuilding the temple of praise.
Who David didn't.
Like, it's a huge biblical storyline that David wanted to build God's temple, and God told him he could not, that Solomon had to build it.
That's almost like in We Are the World when they say, as God has shown us by turning stones to bread. And you're like,
maybe
he didn't turn stones to bread. He was tempted by the devil to do that, and he rejected the devil in the desert. You know who sang that line? Willie Nelson. We came full circle.
Oh my goodness!
I'm pretty sure that was Willie Nelson line.
Person in the room thought, "Hey, everybody."
Many of them who were like Christians. I mean, like for Hollywood elites. I mean, they were believers. Like, Lionel Richie. I mean, I don't know who all they. I mean, at that point, Michael Jackson would have been Jehovah's Witness. So who knows what his belief system was or what his versions of the Bible stories were. But it's like, as God has shown us by turning stones to bread, you're like, even as like a 12-year-old when that came out, I was like, I have questions.
Why not? What an opportunity to get a co-write. You know what I'm saying? Just be the one guy. You could have made $1 billion off of that. So.
Yeah. I mean, there's other stories of him feeding the 5,000. You could use that analogy. You didn't have to say, hey, God is against hunger. We could have showed that in a lot of different ways, by other than saying, hey, remember when the devil asked us to turn stones to bread and we did it?
Oh, my goodness. That's...
That's why my mom didn't like that song. Well, she didn't like any secular music. We would... You know, my mom was...
By the very fact you said secular.
Right. That lets you know what you grew up in.
That doesn't exist. That's such a Christian word. Like,
secular.
No one outside of Christianity ever calls music secular.
Right. Secular versus sacred. Right. Yeah, it's like a way to differentiate. But anything that wasn't, Christian music wasn't really not... I wouldn't say it wasn't allowed in our home, but I had to sneak it in our home. It was... And by the time I got to be a teenager, it was a little bit more. She'd be like, what is this song about? And she would ask me questions about it.
Yeah.
But there was a time when it was just like, I remember when We Are the World came out, she was just like, can you believe? She was really upset. And I was like, she kind of has a right to be. I mean, they're trying to help starving people, but it is very like theologically weird that they put that line in there.
Well, I remember everybody went after that song because it sounds
like we are the world,
right?
Yeah. We're not the world. We're in the world, but not of the world.
It, not of it. We're on it, but not through
it. But that
it.
Doesn't, you can't say.
It's a strange.
I remember Prince wasn't invited and he was deeply offended. He wasn't invited to be a part of the ensemble. He's one of the biggest recording stars in the world when that all happened. It was like, ever, come on, everybody, Bob Dylan, even if you can't really sing, get in here, Cyndi Lauper. And then no Prince. And I don't know why it was, what it was about. I think there was like a feud kind of between him and Michael Jackson, and Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie were really like the key machines behind We Are the World. And I remember Saturday Night Live did a thing the next week where it was like Prince doing his own version of We Are the World. It was like, I am also the world. It was like, I am also the children. I remember thinking it was so funny, even as a kid.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, a lot of the Christian music or Christian radio stations go completely to Christmas music.
Yeah.
Like the day after Thanksgiving.
Do they? But they don't. They play the religious Christmas music.
I think they play all the silly stuff, all of it. Yeah. So
they play Santa Claus is Coming to Town and.
Yeah, it's all of it. All of it.
I can't get down with that.
Well,
I don't care. I like them all.
I started playing Christmas music very early this year. Like I felt the need. For this to be a thing, you know, like to
I like the Santa Claus is Coming to Town with the backup singers. The Santa Claus come to town. That's right, Santa. I like that. That's the one.
Yeah.
You get in the. It's got some groove to it. You know.
Yeah.
Whoever was the first one to break that song down, they win. I don't know who did it first, but
yeah, put that little stop.
Yeah,
that little rest.
Like, whoa, you can do that to the classics. Oh man.
Yeah, you should go watch the Mariah Carey one. She, you know, the television special is very.
There's one I heard that her and Ariana Grande at some point harmonized their high pitched whatever that octave thing they did, the squeal.
They're called.
They harmonized it.
Oh, my daughter's gonna kill me. They're called something.
Harmonics?
Notes. No, there's something notes. I'm sorry. My wife is yelling right now.
Oh, no. So. This is like Ryan Johnson last week when we didn't remember Ryan Johnson. All the Star Wars people were freaking out.
Because we talk about it all the time. But yes, they did. They harmonized it. And they had Jennifer Hudson. It was a trio. Jennifer Hudson, Ariana Grande, and Mariah Carey.
Sheesh.
But Mariah Carey doesn't sing. That's the thing. Only towards the end did she really start pushing. Did she ever sound like Mariah Carey?
Oh, really?
I think she's really... ragged her voice. I mean, I can't imagine how you wouldn't.
Well, yeah, it's been a lot.
Doing all this stuff.
But, well, she's not been touring, though. You would think she's rested.
But maybe she's singing all chest voice. Like, it's very... And then she started pushing, finally, towards the end. A few times only did she, like, hit what sounded like Mariah Carey. But it's like a different singer. It's still really good. I thought that was fun.
You've given up on Mariah.
No, it's fine. I thought, you know, she did. Of course, they saved All I Want for Christmas Is You to the end. Which, that song, by the way, has been rewritten... And by 100 different times, that is the like central. In fact, I want you
it's
and I.
It's been rewritten. You mean covered?
No, I'm saying like the context or what's the word I'm looking for here? The genre, of Christmas music has like these silos, and a key silo in Christmas music is this idea of I don't want anything for Christmas
right,
but you,
except for you.
And so, like, it's rewritten. Or I just want you to come home for Christmas.
Yeah.
Or I just want...
Well, now it's not that. Now it's like a threat. I'll be home for Christmas is like a threat now. It's like, don't you dare come
home. You know, Dane's singing it Sunday.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, him and Bethany.
If only in my... That's the thing about that song. It's like, first of all, you're like, I'll be home. You can count on me. And then you get to the end. If only... You said we could count on you. What do you mean, if only in your dreams? Are you going to be here or not, Chet?
We were talking about on staff. It actually could be emotional for some people because it's very much like,
well, for this
we
year,
really are going to be home for Christmas.
Yeah. You know? Well, that or there are people who can't go be home because they're afraid to
make if only my dream works for this now. Like it's a very,
I guess,
you know.
But there's like demands. Please have snow, mistletoe, presents under the tree. It's like, whoa,
easy. Why don't you shell out?
Why don't
a little,
you bring some of that stuff?
No kidding. And
bring it with you. Oh, only in your dreams.
Oh, nice.
Loser.
We can't count on you.
No.
So.
I had a moment. First of all, you know, my wife is on the list to get the vaccine first.
Wow.
Not first of anybody, but
like
I mean
the
like,
first person.
She's our Neil Armstrong. She's Nell Armstrong. No. She is going to, she'll have a strong arm.
Can you
just hope so? Because Neil's arm sore. Anyway, I'm sorry. This is really, I'm stretching the story. No, but she got a letter from her work that said that she, because she's a first line, whatever, healthcare. Because she cares, she's a caregiver for a lady, and our beautiful friend Tab. And so because she takes care of Tab, she's going to get the shot. Two shots, I guess.
So she's getting the Pfizer one.
I don't know which one it is. I need to find that out. Do they tell you what flavor it is?
I think the Moderna is one.
Can you get the second shot from a different... What if you get the Moderna one and then the AstraZeneca?
No, they're different. Don't do that.
Don't chase your Moderna with a Pfizer. Oh, my God. You'll grow a third arm.
I told someone this week we could start a black market of this, like, and we came up on the staff call. We're very productive on our staff calls.
Oh, sure. It sounds like it. Roy, just out there doing kingdom work.
It was like, listen, because when you get it, because she'll be one of the first ones, we hope, like, we need to find a way. I was like, if you'll get it, I'll give you $1,000 for it. And then we'll go just start selling these things,
okay,
you know?
Okay, yeah.
And they were like, well, how is she going to do that?
Yeah.
Because they're going to have to administer it. And that's when Roy was like, well, we get like a little, like, flesh-looking pouch.
Oh, right.
Pouch.
Mm-hmm.
That, so they inject it.
It saves it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she'd be like, ouch! You know, but really, she feels nothing.
She says, ouch.
And then we take that bag and go, and anyway, I just wonder, dude, black market coronavirus vaccine.
Interesting.
So even though it's free, it's going to be offered to everybody. But
I think we'll have a hard enough time getting everybody to take it. I can't wait to take it. I'm excited to get it.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm ready. You know, but we'll monitor. I'll monitor Curry's. I'll be honest with you guys. If you go, oh man, it was rough the first one. I'll tell you. If she had a fever, because I've known some people get a fever for 12 hours or something, that you just take a couple Tylenol, you're good. But, you know, whatever. I get it. Some people are wary of it. My favorite thing is people who are like, I don't know about that vaccine, is they chug Red Bull.
Right.
I don't even know what's in that thing. They're smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, we already take a lot of risk with our health. And I'm not saying we take, again, we talked about this a little bit last week, but I understand.
I get that, you know, it's like they said, well, it will be years, and then we have it in ready in 7 or 8 months, and people are like, what was the, have we rushed this? But then once I read a bunch of the reports and I saw some of the things about why we were able to do it so quick, because it's different when the whole world is focusing on something like this at once. It does make a little difference. I'm very heartened by it, and I'm hoping that everybody will get it. Because, I mean, I just am ready to ditch the mask. I think the sooner we all get immunity, the sooner we can get back to, like, hey, I can see your face again. Wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I heard an epidemiologist say that you got to remember that people have been studying coronaviruses for years.
So
it's not a completely new science. It's just this, they've never seen the strain.
Yeah.
So some of that, like, and again, I can't speak for what's going to happen. I'm just saying I have a higher level of confidence knowing things like that. Like, okay.
Rather than just to let it go alone. Well, we'll just go it alone without a vaccine. Like, no, I'd rather go ahead and trust the scientists.
And I did read some of the same research sources you were talking about there, that the fact that all of the world is focused on it in terms of the medical and the scientific community is a big deal. Like there's a lot that you can move that ball down the field a lot faster because of sharing. And then, of course, the third factor is that there are almost incalculable number of cases to look at and to try things on. So you don't have to wait for a test.
And honestly, if we're going to go on just free market capitalism, there's a lot of money to be made from fixing this problem and a lot of money to save not being lost. You know what I'm saying? Like when you were looking at economic disaster of letting a virus just ravish us for 5 years while we develop this thing, there's a lot of incentive to move on it. And so you got to, that's almost like when capitalism is good, like when these biopharma companies are like, let's be the ones.
Yeah,
you know, they were all in a race to be the first ones, and now we have three.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard for me because I do want to. That's the thing about history, requires time, in order to have clear viewpoint of it. So this will be in our history, and we won't know. We can't have a full clarity of it at the time it's happening.
Yeah. So if we all turn into wolf people, we will have been on the podcast being like, "Guys, it's safe. Go take the." What are you being stupid
that's what I'm saying,
for?
There's a level of risk. There's also risk. I mean, again, just my. My brother's half brother was just 45 years old on a ventilator. Then they took him to another hospital and put him on an ECMO machine where they basically take your blood out and treat it and put it back in. It was like a last ditch effort. No priors. It sounds like he went to jail.
This guy had no priors.
No pre-existing conditions.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I'm hearing those kinds of things daily. And then other people, it's just a very, you know, the majority, it's not that. It just seems like it hits. So there's a risk regardless. And everybody's weighing that, and I understand it already. And y'all don't want to talk about coronavirus a lot, I'm sure, the podcast.
Well, I had a great, there was amazing, I listen to sports talk a lot, sports talk radio a lot. And by the way, I started realizing this, because my wife listens to podcasts a lot. She listens to ours a lot, which is cool. That's really neat that she actually listens to it and likes it. But she was listening to this podcast the other day, and I kind of came in, and she had it on her phone, like it wasn't in her headphones. And the people were like arguing back and forth and yelling and woo, and it's just like stepping on each other. It was so annoying to me because I was hearing from the next room. I couldn't really hear what they were talking about. I go, can you put your, I go, please, can I? And then I felt like I'm being so stupid. Like she's listening to her, she's enjoying it. I'm like, knock it off in there with your enjoyment. So I apologize. But it made me realize, like, I have sports talk radio on in the car, and she's, like, enduring it, you know, while they talk about why the Vikings are going to win the next game. But every now and again, I'm like, she knows about sports now. Like, she's kind of, like, I know Laura's a sports person. Like, she knows about the Vols, at least. But the other day, we're listening, and they're talking about the playoff coming up. And you got these teams in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 that didn't play a lot of games, and they're trying to figure out, like, how they can get in the playoff. Hey, Cincinnati, for instance, 5-0. They're mad because there's teams that have one loss, two losses ahead of them. They're like, what in the world?
They play, yeah.
Right. And so Curry goes, she just looks over at me. We're just driving on the way to dinner. And she goes, it doesn't make any sense, though. Yeah, they might be as good, but how can you ever compare apples to apples if they didn't play the right teams? Like, it's not really their fault they didn't play all the games, but you can't also then just put them in the playoff just because. And I was like, I have never been more attracted to you. Like, she had a sports take.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was like we pulled over and made out. It was something else. We got a ticket, but it was worth it. No, I was. But then one of the things they sell on the show, which I was going to tell you about, this is the best idea. I can't see any holes in the idea. Well, one slight hole. But there's a show called JT the Brick. You know who JT the Brick is? Brick at Night's what his show is. Anyway, he's a longtime sports commentator. Very loud, shock jock kind of a guy. But he's all right. So he had this idea. So the Super Bowl's coming up. We've had no fans in the stands for a very few games, right? There's been a few cities where they're like, let's do it. And then they're like immediately like, no. And then there's cardboard cutouts. It seems like it's going to be a real drag to have a Super Bowl with no fans. The vaccine's probably not going to be in full swing by then for everybody. But he goes, we want to honor these first line defenders, these first line responders and all this stuff. Nurses.
And they're getting vaccinated.
They're all going to get vaccinated. Let's give free tickets to them. That way the Super Bowl stadium's full and they got their ticket. They're going to be so excited to be there. It's a way to honor them. Now we have actual crowd noise in the stand. That's real crowd. And it's not just some rich fat cat that bought the ticket. It's an actual like nurse. I can't see a problem. Can you see a problem with that? Other than here's the problem.
The hospitals are empty.
Right. The hospital. Nobody's taking care of sick people, but you make sure it's their day off. Like there's enough nurses, right?
Sure.
What is it, 40,000 people, 50,000 people in the Super Bowl that we need to fill it? I don't know. Unless you have it at, like, I don't know where it is.
This year?
It's in Arizona?
Most of them are in the 60s, I think, 50 to 60.
Right, if it's not Jerry World in Dallas, that's 90,000 or whatever, or 100,000. But anyway, I was like, I can't see a problem with this idea. It's beautiful.
I like it.
Perfect.
I like it. And you didn't hear it here first.
But no, I'm just saying. I want to get the momentum going for it. What do you guys think? What do you think, dear talk about that, listeners?
Yeah, I think it'd be great. Let's write our, I don't know, who do you write?
I mean, wouldn't it be amazing to look out there and see, like, all these people that you knew, like, they've been working 80-hour weeks trying to save our dumb lives?
My wife said that she saw tons of videos of frontline workers just weeping as they got the vaccine. I mean, it's been so long.
Yeah.
That they...
They've been putting themselves at risk?
Yeah, daily. You know, and a lot of them got sick.
So I think it'd be perfect. And it solves two problems. You honor them. You solve the problem of not having a crowd. Yep. And you also give this cool, like, great moment to the country.
Yep.
I don't know.
You bring in me, Jennifer Hudson, Mariah Carey, and Johnny to do the halftime show.
Dude, I will harmonize my little, like,
whistle.
I can't do the...
They're called whistle notes.
Oh, whistle notes.
There you go. Wow.
Well, that just seems like it's just called what it is. I thought it was going to have some other...
No, I just... Sorry. Whistle
trickier
notes.
Name. Well, I don't know if I can get there. I don't know if I have the range there, but I can get, you know...
We didn't have any of that at all.
I got a little rasp that I can hit them with.
You do. You're raspy. You're way raspy in the old videos. Because, you know, you...
Oh, sure.
That was late 90s, early 2000 butt rock.
Right? Don't say we were butt rock, John.
We weren't, but we had...
We had flavors.
We had that in there a little bit. It was, you know...
That's what you did, right?
Yeah.
That's what we tell ourselves?
That's right. That's right. Hey, by the way, we have a question.
Oh.
From a listener.
Okay.
So, a listener sent us an email and said... And this, it is going to be... This is a... I'm just going to read it. Because you don't know what this is. I was wondering if you could talk about the news that Matthew McConaughey recently became a Christian. Do you think his faith is real? Because it seems he doesn't talk about when he prayed to receive Christ. seems fishy, possibly. He claims to be a Christian but didn't mention anything about praying to receive Christ. Could you talk about other celebrities who claim the same things as McConaughey? Would you be willing to discuss this sometime on your podcast? So I think that that's a fair question that a lot, and you and I were talking about this a little bit at lunch today, unrelated to this question, and that is this. We see it in conservatism. I think we also see it in Christianity, like this idea of who's a real one. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so I mean, I'm not. I think out of the gate within evangelicalism, and especially the way you and I were brought up, man, the moment of conversion is like the key. It's the key, not only experience, it's the key metric for how churches evaluate mm-hmm. and denominations evaluate their effectiveness is by the moment of conversion, whether it's the raising of a hand for some, it's the moment at baptism, all those things. When we were both ordained in a denomination, I mean, our church had to fill out annually these reports.
Right.
How many did this? How many did this? How many did this? And I don't think there's anything wrong, like, in theory with just that idea. And I rejoice with conversions are important. But I think scripturally, to answer this question, there's two places to go. One, let's go theological, and you can chime in, Johnny, anytime.
Okay. This.
So, like, theologically, biblically, you know, what made someone a Christian? Like, that's a real key question, I think, that we as modern Christians who kind of see this like as a almost as a transaction, like I can point to the moment it happened and here's my receipt. I'm a Christian, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that that's mostly true. You know, Paul had a moment of conversion, but we don't have a record of Paul, like the moment he said, Jesus, come into my heart. We don't have that prayer
right
in Scripture. We have him being blinded and obeying. Like he found his way to the city, you know. You look at the disciples; we don't have a record. Like Jesus mm-hmm. said, "Come and follow me." He did some miracles.
Right. Their following was their receipt,
right? So there was like this moment of, and certainly there. Now you have when Jesus said, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the Living God." Mm-hmm. And that was that confession. Was, of course, you could make the argument that the disciples weren't true believers. I don't believe that, but that argument can be made until Jesus was resurrected.
Yeah,
in terms of the way we see Christians.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about McConaughey's personal story. I know a lot of people would say like some of the movies and choices that he made would disqualify him because he's on the movie screens cursing or right. having premarital sex or whatever his characters are doing, and that would disqualify. Then some people would be like, well, he gave a speech at the Oscars and he mentioned God, and he's good in my book. It's good to have another Christian in Hollywood. So they would go with that.
Yeah.
I think he's known to be very philanthropic. I know that about him. He seems like a pretty level-headed guy. I know he's very, you know, he's a Texas guy. He's probably conservative by Hollywood standards. I think he's in some hot water this week because he talked about the illiberal left. He was saying like there's liberals and then there's the illiberals who are being illogical. They're basically sending people running to the arms of Donald Trump by being so crazy left.
Yeah.
And he was like, the most of the country is in the middle and we just want people to be logical and we want people to make sense. And when you, because he was saying that people who say if you voted for Trump that you're an unspeakable monster, he's like, that's not how we unify people, when you just say us versus them and you can't ever see where they're coming from. And then he got in hot water and had to clarify some of his statements. So I think that's one of the reasons that probably question is even there, is that he's kind of having to, he's in the news now. But I, from what I've seen, I know he just wrote a book. It's called Green Lights, I want to say.
Yeah.
I've heard it's actually amazing. And it's got a lot of his kind of his life model. He's a very introspective, thoughtful person.
Yeah. As the Lincoln commercials.
Right, test. Exactly. Yeah. He sits in his Lincoln and just kind of just ponders life.
Ice fishes, whatever.
That's right. Whatever
out
he has
of,
to
out
do.
Of his Lincoln.
I'm yeah, sure. From the hatch. He just sits in the hatch and just thinks about life. Thinks to himself. But I don't know. It's so weird to like that idea of what our expectations are of super famous people. Like I've thought that about Denzel. Denzel's had some public proclamations of his faith in God in the media before. And somebody else could be like, yeah, but I saw Training Day and he was a complete lunatic and there's no way that guy's a Christian. I just, It's hard, man. That whole thing about work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, I mean, I think that's for real. To me, it's like, if I have to go around figuring out who else is... there was a time in my life when it was a huge deal for me to go figure out who I could figure out wasn't as saved as me. But it's just not my thing anymore.
Yeah, I think it's a... It'd be easy for me to... Because I completely agree with you. I also understand, because we were there a lot of our lives, like the desire to see the fruit of someone's life and then reverse engineer the conclusion of whether or not they're a quote unquote. I think this is where we are, and this is where the danger lies a little bit. I'm putting air quotes out right now. Hey, who's the real Christian?
Yeah.
Kind of like, who's the real conservative now, or who's the real liberal? And like, when there's delineations within it,
yeah,
I do think that we get, you know, into dangerous waters. Now, that being said, there is orthodoxy within all ideology, okay, whether it's religious or not. And there's validity to that orthodoxy. That this is why the early church spent so much time battling against heresies. So, you know, they were saying, we're not going to allow you. So if the someone comes out in one of the early heresies and says, well, Jesus wasn't really God. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a created being and not an uncreated one. Well, yeah. I mean, that was dangerous to the theology that was already fully established, and it was the opposite of what Jesus had said about himself. So what do? Do you just be like, well, we're just going to let them, they're Christians too, because they want to serve Jesus. And so they felt this need to call out the heresies. Now, that being said, today what we have, and you see a lot of these guys on Twitter, they're even in their description, they will say, or in their bios, like, they consider themselves the watchdogs.
Oh, right.
You know, there's this watchdog movement now. Mm-hmm. I don't see a lot of, I don't see that as the same thing as the church, you know, the church leadership, because we don't have that per se, one church leadership anymore, holding heresies accountable versus watchdogs trying to figure out who out there
right,
is
you're
a
setting,
real Christian.
Yeah, some of all the watchdog people are setting themselves as a standard and saying, if you vary from my standard.
Right.
That's almost like tribalism. I'm looking for Matthew McConaughey to back up my belief system by seeing how he aligns with me, almost.
And what the deal is, I just want to be careful. It is another great example is Kanye. You know, my daughter asked me about Kanye. And I think kids, especially in Christian culture, often, do you think Kanye's really a Christian?
Right, right.
I'll get that question sometimes from kids. Do you think Kanye's really a Christian? And I'm just like, what do you mean? Like, that's a really important question if you're going to ask it to understand, you know, and you know, what do you mean? Well, he's married to a Kardashian. I've heard that one. It's like, I think if you begin to really dial back, it's important. All these are important questions. Like, what is it that we think makes that real? For me, I spent my whole life, I don't think Christians really ask that question because they think they already have it answered.
Like, once he accepted Christ, he should immediately divorce Kim because that would be more holy.
Right.
I got to let you go, girl.
Like, you know, and again, it's just, but the deal is, there's no doubt what they're saying is these cultures, these statements being made either in music or television or movies or by, you know, these don't seem to align with Christian culture, to which I would say, and I'm going to be very careful here, a lot of conservatism, political conservatism in the last 5 years that claims to defend Christianity does not align with Christianity.
Correct.
Like, I mean, that's, I think, I don't know anybody who'd really dispute that. They would not like that I said it.
Right.
But there's a lot of it that doesn't. And I'm not, this is not a, what about the liberals? Like, if I'm saying just it alone as a conservative, speaking to conservative issues, I'm not really addressing all the others. I'm just saying we already accept that somebody can act like, can say things that don't seemingly align with what we expect Christians to say.
They can make terrible life choices, et cetera.
And we're
also be like, yeah, but he's got a good heart or whatever. We'll defend.
Or as long as the political viewpoint or position helps, you know, what it is that we believe in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we would have to ask, and I ask that question of all, if I get asked that question, especially by, in my house, I'll be like, well, what makes you a Christian?
Right.
Well, what makes daddy a Christian? These are important questions. And if you say, because you're a pastor, nah, that's not it. Is it, well, because you want to do good things. Nah, that's not it. You listen to this kind of music, like, you know, you start going down. I'm not saying these come, but over the years in youth ministry, this has come up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, I remember the story of the guy. This is something like, Jesus has not even gone to the cross yet. And there was a guy who was out preaching the gospel and healing people. Remember this?
Mm-hmm.
And the disciples got super offended. And they told him to stop.
Mm-hmm.
They literally told him to stop. And Jesus rebuked them for it. And he said, listen, anyone who is not against us is for us in this. Like, but I think what he was trying to say is, hey, anyone who wants this, I want it for them worse than you do.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I have to tell that myself, even over the years, is like, I told Sadie the other night, like, Sadie, when you were born, because we saw, again, we're looking through old videos, when you were born, like, you just cried. That's all you had to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't, you know, I was there. And if you don't think I was not watching every second that they carried her, or I got to carry her on the elevator to the nursery. And you were there, by the way, outside the window, I saw in the video. You were there. You were the scarecrow. and, like, everything about my life was protecting, advocating, asking questions,
yeah,
nurturing my family at that point, and specifically the baby who did not know. I said, you know, I told her, I was like, honey, you're still just a 12-year-old baby in God's eyes, and I'm just a 41-year-old baby in God's eyes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still being protected and loved and nurtured on that level. Like, it hasn't gone away because I'm older human-wise,
right,
in this drop of bucket in the eternity.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, his mercy for me is greater than my mercy for a newborn.
Yeah, and I guess I have a little more, now that I'm older and I've been a believer long as I have, I think I have a little more grace for that, too. Like, when I used to see somebody in Hollywood, I would have way bigger expectations of them, or somebody given a platform like Bono, for instance.
Yeah.
He's given this great platform to share his faith, and if he missteps or whatever, he says something publicly or he's seen at some crazy party, I'd be like, oh, so disappointed. Now I'm like, you know, I just have more grace for that person. I'm like, I can't imagine the pressure on that. And then I think about, it's almost like the old analogy we've said before about falling up the escalator.
Yeah.
You know, you're falling down an up escalator.
Right.
I mean, I feel like that's what we're all doing. It's just like when somebody's in the public eye doing it, I just go, man, that's got to be hard. I wouldn't think like, oh, they've got so much easier. All he's got to do is proclaim God from the mountaintops every day, every minute of every day. And he doesn't do it, so he's let us all down. I'm just like, man, I don't know. I don't know enough about that guy's life to really render a judgment.
Yeah, well, Stephen Colbert claims to be a strong Christian, that his faith is very important.
Dude, I've heard him talk. Oh, yeah, dude. I've seen him share before. One time somebody was like on there who was a pronounced, you know, agnostic atheist, and they were talking about how the Gospels are one of the clear delineation, the clear evidences of contradiction in the Bible. And he was just like, he just sat there and let this guy say all this, and then he goes, no. He goes, it's like if we go to a party and, you know, we're together with three other guys, we're all going to have different things that we tell about that party. He goes, that's the Gospels. And like the way he said it was just way more eloquent than that. And then the crowd kind of was just like dumbfounded by it. And then they all just started clapping. And I was just like, yeah. Like, yeah, he didn't back down. He wasn't like, well, I can't lose the ratings here if I really defend my faith here. I mean, this guy teaches Sunday school. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Colbert. And that's a guy who somebody would say it's a lefty lunatic or whatever. But again, his faith's very important to him. He's a devout Catholic. And we might differ on some ideas, but it's like, I don't know. I just don't have the heart to, I don't have the time to sit around thinking that stuff anymore. Maybe I just.
Well, again, I think the key is how do you view God and how do you think God views you?
Mm-hmm.
There's one thing in my recovery that always comes back to, it's that. And that's where I'm broken most. I'm most broken in the place of.
Yeah. Me. Do you think God's for you and he's rooting for your success? Or do you think God's like.
Yeah. When I'm not who I know I should be, which is pretty much daily, especially mm-hmm. right now. When I feel undisciplined, then I naturally still feel a distance that scripturally doesn't exist.
Yeah.
That I'm still just his child. I'm not saying he doesn't punish. I'm not saying he doesn't hold accountable. I'm not saying he doesn't discipline. I'm not saying that what you do doesn't matter. Like, I got to get all the extremes out of the way. But if the Christianity that we espouse doesn't have this radical love of the Father, this radical love, that it is, we get exactly what we have today. Mm-hmm. Number one, it's not attractional to the world because they're not seeing it affect us. We're literally just still kind of up and down on the good deeds or bad deeds of the people. We're kind of just making, it's the George Carlin. Everybody drives faster than us is a maniac. Everyone drives slower than us is an idiot. And that's kind of what we become now. Everyone who we pick and choose. And again, the early 20th century for a lot of people is alcohol. Everyone who drinks alcohol is, couldn't be a Christian. You know, that's prohibition and all these things. And then it became, you know, for a lot in the 50s, you know, well, I don't have ghosts in the movie theater. Like you
the dance halls and the, yeah.
You begin to pick out things when within each of those, there's wisdom, there's biblical wisdom. And there's certainly things that are right and wrong. So I think, again, if I am a conservative, if I'm someone listening to this who's really, like, struggling with this issue, the question I'd be screaming at my radio would be, like, hey, what about life and death issues, black and white issues, and you have those? The only reason that you voted type issues, you mm-hmm. know, that and I would say to that, yes, and, like, yes, we can have that conviction. And yes, it could be right. And the judgment of all those things is certainly not in our hands. And that is the best news. So Paul would tell you, live by those convictions. That's fine. Live by those convictions. But the law of love is a greater law than your law of conviction. And the law of love says that I approach, in fact, let your gentleness be known to all men is what it says. But if you really break it down, the Amplified, I'm sorry, I'm doing this from memory. So, but the words for gentleness are tolerance, reasonableness. Like there's this, it's not just act gentle. Mm-hmm. It is a reasonable tolerance of lots of things within the body. And within that, I can call something right and wrong, but I can do it in a way that edifies. Even if we disagree, I should always let, when it says let no corrupt communication proceed from your mouth, which is, by the way, the verses for you and I and Christian school kids and Sunday school kids, all that ever meant was what?
Cussing, yeah.
Don't cuss. If you keep reading that verse, do not let any corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but only what is good for the edification of others. Like, the idea is not just the absence of that negative, but the presence of. You're supposed to only speak what is uplifting, not as a cheerleader, but the gospel is that uplifting place, and the gospel calls for correction. It makes room for all that. We just don't have it. So I would say this about Matthew McConaughey. I will say this, just like any other believer, one, Jesus wants him to be a believer. Two, if you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you shall be saved. Romans 10, 9 and 10. Like, that confession to the media is a confession. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, you know, whether or not he references the moment of it, I'd say, hey, I know why we want that moment. I have a feeling he wouldn't make that confession without that moment. But acknowledging that moment versus acknowledging Christ, I think we got to, it's okay to delineate between the two. I would say three, he's not going to bear the fruits as God wants him to, just like you won't and I won't, if he doesn't live in this real Christ-centered community with others where he does get admonishment, correction, and encouragement and training and all those things. That is true carte blanche for all believers, and there's a lot of non-celebrity believers today who are living, again, in a shallow Ark Eden place, if you will, you know, where I'm not here to judge there whether they're believers or not. I know that Jesus loves his babies. I'm aware of that, regardless of how everybody else feels about it. I think his grace is deeper. He literally died so that people would not perish. So that's pretty important to him. And that I'm glad he gets the final say in all those things. I can relinquish control of that question. I don't need it anymore because it doesn't bear any fruit in me anyway. But I will say everybody needs his ways because they're the best ways. Like, they lead to the right life that you want. So yeah, if Matthew McConaughey goes and lives in isolation and all those things, I'm not saying whether he's going to heaven or not. I could just say he won't experience, or he will experience, a fullness of life on earth that reflects the goodness of God and his gospel to others, depending on what he does with that, just like we all do. But it's still not a matter of whether he was never good enough and he was never too bad to have it. Like, neither one of those things were ever true. I don't think the question asked that. I'm just being explicitly over communicative about all those things because I think those are the key to it.
I think we can derive a lot from those commercials about whether he isolates. Is there anyone ever else in those commercials, John?
Oh, my goodness.
He's by himself in that Lincoln, just like so many of us. Talking to himself. Creepy.
Wow.
His inner voice, self-doubt, etc.
Isn't he playing pool one time?
Oh, in the Lincoln?
No.
That's a, it's a big one. It's a gigantic. It's the new Navigators are big.
Hey, thank you for the question, though. We really appreciate it. And hopefully that helps give...
Hopefully Matthew McConaughey heard it, because I think we...
Yeah.
What is your favorite Matthew McConaughey movie? That's the real question.
You know, he's one of those...
Oh, boy. He's one of those what? You don't like his movies?
This is awkward after I just talked about it all. I'm not saying I don't like his movies.
He
comes off as the what's up stud kind of guy for me a little too much in the movies. Kind of like a real, I don't know.
That's interesting. He kind of reminds me of you. No.
he's a, you know what? If I had one, my favorite Matthew McConaughey.
Don't you think Matthew McConaughey would be a cool guy to hang out with?
I do.
Though? He seems like a kind of guy that'd just be like, to have at your cookout, just.
What's the one?
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Okay, I can tell you something. I think it's a brilliant movie.
Do you?
I do.
That's the one I think is kind of silly. No. All those romantic comedy.
But Johnny.
Kate Hudson-y.
It's all about premise, man. That's a great premise that they both are trying to do something in 10 days. They don't know it. Someone what's set the, them against each
what's
other.
What's the Grisham movie that kind of made him a star? Time to Kill?
I don't think I ever saw Time to Kill.
Yeah. He was kind of the lawyer, the hothead Southern lawyer.
Okay, was that the one with Alec Baldwin?
You're thinking of Mississippi.
Ghost, yeah.
This one had James Woods in it also, though. So he was in Ghost of Mississippi as well, I think. So, yeah.
Was he a racist in this other one?
Yeah, he's, James Woods is always a racist. Wow. No, I don't know.
I liked Fool's Gold. That was kind of a cool movie.
Oh, I never saw that one.
That was with, Kate Hudson.
Kate
Wasn't
Hudson's
she in both
too?
Of them?
I think they
teamed up again. It's kind of like old Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan used to team up a lot.
Interesting. Yeah, they did. They did a few movies together.
Yeah.
Now, no more. Now
we haven't seen Meg Ryan.
She?
In a while.
She got out. I think she just wanted to raise her kids and get on with herself, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, hey.
She got out.
See previous episode about pay me my 2.5.
Right, and you'll go away.
I'll go raise my children.
Pay your buyout.
So.
What would your buyout here be at this job, John? Do you think your church buyout?
Here?
Yeah. You're like, I think I want to just write books. So we're like, all right, well, as per your contract.
Yeah, I wish like I would have made one of those contract things.
$12.52.
Listen, the day I came on this job, instead of signing a contract,
yeah,
I walked up to a construction site, mm-hmm. and they had a little ceremony, and they handed me a hard hat that said F2 on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Roy had a hard hat that said F1. Flunky right. one, flunky two.
Yeah.
And I took a hammer and started knocking forms off of concrete retaining wall. And that's what I did for the next 2 years.
You are the hey dude, what's up guy. See what I'm saying? You're McConaughey. That's a McConaughey plot.
But I'm saying there was no contract.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I told Andrew yesterday, he laughed. He's like, I think, don't tell anybody. I think we might be in by Christmas.
Yeah.
And it was the next Christmas.
The next Christmas.
So we were laughing yesterday, but as long as you don't specify what year it is, you can always tell the truth.
Well, it's like when Trump said we'd be back in church by Easter. He just didn't say which year.
Which Easter? Come on, man. Jesus is coming back in
October. Did Trump really lie?
I don't know.
We'll see you next week on...
Everything changed. Listen, don't make guarantees. That's what I'm saying. History requires time. That's profound.
Oh, that's beautiful.
If you want to really be on the right side
comedy
of history.
Comedy is tragedy plus time. That's what I've always heard.
Comedy is tragedy plus time. Wow, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Equals. Is there a...
I don't know. Tragedy plus time.
Natural
equals...
log of...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, well, send us more of your questions, though. That was fun.
Yeah.
You're like...
I don't know. It's... I hope McConaughey listens. I hope he writes in. Maybe it was him. What if he's like, let's see if these boys think I'm saved.
Listen, I do believe all who want Christ wants them more. I just think that's a key thing.
I think Christ wants us all to be all right, all right, all right.
But, yes, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll keep talking. I do think everyone should be in community as well and growing. So then Jesus makes all the decisions between those things. So, yeah, I think we made that clear. I'm just saying it again for more clarity. So, hey, by the way, for all of our Google listeners, apparently there was some sort of glitch on a website somewhere.
They thought we were canceled, probably.
So that
you
should,
can't get rid of us that easy,
you
Google
can,
listeners.
You can't,
don't
guys.
Even try.
So we're sorry. That's now been fixed. We had to get our specialist, our tech specialist.
This Google's just a startup. You know,
Google's
so you
got to
cut them some slack.
Yeah.
They have problems from time to time.
And, bro, Amazon, come on, man. We'll all be going back to mom-and-pop stores any day now.
Somebody had a great meme the other day. It said, there's no good reason why Jeff Bezos can't be Santa Claus. He has all of our Amazon wish lists, all the money, and drones. And
really
I was
does,
like, that's a great point.
He does see you when you're sleeping.
If he wanted to be Santa Claus, let's do it. Come on, yeah. Bezos. Get
okay.
out here.
I like it. I like it. Hey, you can go to our website, though.
Yeah.
It's
Amazon.com.
/talkaboutthat.
Not a sponsor.
Talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
Yeah. Yeah. All the archived episodes on there. Patreon mm-hmm. link. If you mm-hmm. want to kick in a few shekels, that would help out.
Yeah.
And make sure you subscribe and leave a rating. Help us get the word out. It helps the algorithm so other people can find the show.
Yeah. Anything you're looking for in 2021 that you'd like for us to do?
Yeah.
Maybe have suggestions.
Maybe send us what your favorite and least favorite Christmas song is so we can talk about it next week.
That'd
we
be
don't
great.
Know. We yeah. can be like, oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of that one. That one, figgy pudding, what the heck is it? Nobody mm. knows.
Mm. Figgy pudding.
Yeah. They want you to, they're demanded to bring it now. Bring it right here.
You know what song I was thinking about the other day? I meant to say it Sunday and I didn't. If you want joy, you must clap for it. Remember that?
No.
You don't remember that? The joy of the Lord is our strength.
What cult were you in?
The joy of the same one you were in. The joy of the Lord
same
is our strength.
One you were in.
The joy of the Lord is our strength. 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 So that part
yeah,
was pretty
that.
Easy to remember.
Mm-hmm.
If you want joy, you must clap for it. You remember that line?
No.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm telling you, lots of... I can't believe it, Joe. This is the first time ever in the history of our relationship that we haven't shared.
If you want joy, you must clap for it.
If you want joy, you must clap. And then if you must joy, you must sing for... Like, had all these things you had
okay.
to do.
I remember the whole, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Again, there is an understood...
Happy and you know it, stomp your feet. Doom, doom.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Oh, I remember it.
If you're happy and you know it, John... Then your life will surely show it.
Oh, yeah.
By stomping your feet? It's weird. We're teaching people to, like, put works in. Like, even as kids, we're like, show me.
Yeah.
Show me you're happy.
Yeah. Well, you must clap for it.
Tell your face.
Yeah.
Cut your hair. If you're happy and you know it, cut your hair. That was my Christian school that I grew up in.
If you're happy and you know it, remove your tattoo.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So, hey, I'm thinking about, what if I got a tattoo?
Right.
I was having a conversation with someone the other day. Well, let me see. Oh, he knows who he is. And we were talking about
life. What do you mean he knows who he is?
Well, I don't want to,
you don't want to say the name?
He may not want me to share.
Okay.
But I said, we were talking about business and stuff. And I was
you
know what my favorite proverb, one of my favorite proverbs is? One gives generously, yet grows all the richer,
mm-hmm.
while another withholds what he should give and only suffers want.
Yeah.
And my friend says, that, I've been looking for a tattoo verse or something, and that's it. I want that one. One gives generously and grows all the richer, and another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. Proverbs, I'm sorry. I don't remember that.
That's a long tattoo, though.
Yeah, maybe you could just take the first
what
letter.
What font are you getting for that thing? It's going to be a back piece.
Do you remember our friend? We probably taught this. He got his tattoo when we were Numa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to say his name, Dylan.
Yeah?
And he came in to show me, because we were Numa was our young adult ministry.
Right,
before,
right, right.
You know, you went from living room and then
Numa,
you went on the road
Greek
and
for
abandoned
spirit,
us.
Right.
Yeah, for spirit, breath, you know,
mm-hmm,
all those things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, He said, I got a tattoo. I mean, I'm talking big across
I can't
his
remember.
Chest.
Tell me it didn't say pneumonia.
It said, P-N, he got the P.
Yeah.
U-M-A.
Oh.
It left out the E.
Oh.
It was like no regards.
It was like Puma.
It was like, and I go.
Puma with an N.
Dylan, you know there's an E in Numa.
Oh,
and
no.
He had this face, man, like his mouth just kind of It's like, it's okay. Maybe there, maybe that is a, another Greek spelling of pneuma that I'm not aware of.
True.
I mean, he, I don't speak Greek, per se.
No. Wait. He, yeah, that's tough. Yeah. Wasn't there, who else do we have that had tattoo, that had a, like, one of them said, the kingdom come on their back or something?
We had a lot of tattoos.
Yeah, I think there was somebody that, but it was like, they ran out of room or something happened. Something was wrong by the end of that tattoo.
Yeah.
That's the thing I'd be afraid of. It was a big thing to get the Chinese symbols back in the day. Like, oh, this means hope, and you don't know what it means.
Right.
You've not done the research.
Right. It meant tattoo or whatever. It was like, just, yeah.
You know. And can you believe they're falling for it? Whatever. Ugly American.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I think you hold off. You're this old now. It's kind of like a grasping.
Well, that's always
youth.
In my advice. Look, I've never been against tattoos, per se. But people would always ask me, like, Pastor John, do you get a tattoo? I was like, look, here's what I say. Mm. If you're 30 and you still want something so bad, something so important to you, you're willing to put on your body for the rest of your life, go for it at 30.
Right.
Because by 30, a lot of the hormones will have subsided, you know.
Right.
Like, you can see. But if you do it right now, I'm going to tell you something. You're still, hopefully.
Yeah, you don't know that you're going to love New Kids on the Block that much.
Right.
20 years from now.
There's a chance some things may change.
Right.
That you can't anticipate.
As luck would have it, I still love them just as much. And I'm here to show you.
I can't think of one New Kids song.
You've Got the Right Stuff there tattoo on my ankle.
You've got the right stuff. That was not a bad song. It was bad. We'll listen to 90s in the car on trips, you know, and Sadie just, when we get to the
she
boy
cringes.
Band.
She cringes? Oh,
with
yeah.
Boy band, she really cringes. She
oh,
likes
even like NSYNC,
it.
Though?
She can handle some of it.
Some NSYNC is pretty good, but with the ballads, I don't dig. But some of the, you know.
I think if she knows if Justin Timberlake was involved in some way, that brings some credibility to it because he's still, you know, relevant now.
Yeah.
So anything that has, you know, you can tie two people to Jimmy Fallon or Timberlake or somebody. Like,
right.
You know, there's, you know, so. But no, you can't just, you know, oh, you should know how big this person was back then. Yeah, no, that doesn't fly.
Yeah. So she wouldn't get, like, the Lance Bass solo project.
Probably not. She did get into MC Hammer for a bit, though.
Interesting.
Yeah, she was listening to a couple of those in her playlist. She's very diverse. Like, my daughter listens. I'm pretty proud. Like, she has reasons. For like vocally for things that she listens to, she's got a good ear.
All right. Well,
yeah, I heard her listen to Scarlet Thread the other day.
And
No, she was not.
She's like, what is this butt rock awfulness? Is this Nickelback? Get out of here.
Oh, my goodness.
We apologize.
Yes. All right. Well, guys, hey, listen, thanks so much for joining us for another week and hope that you're gearing up for a very Merry Christmas and a good time, even if it's virtually with your family. Just be encouraged that we'll all make it through this, Johnny. And this is, there's not a new normal. There's no such thing as normal. So this is not it. And life will be different again and hopefully in better ways. You guys hang in there. We'll see you next week on
Talk About.
What do you do when the world around you is falling apart? It's amazing to me how many people are breathing air. They're going about their business and doing the things you're supposed to do. But if you really ask them, they know that on the inside, they are spiritually and emotionally and relationally dead. If we're not careful, all of us can experience that death. When what we need to do, even as the world around us is falling apart, we need to learn how to march when it would be easier to stay where we are and die. Join me each week on the March or Die Show as we discuss that and so much more.